The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. When we look at the bill that we receive from the government, either in the form of federal taxes, state taxes, property taxes, sales taxes, the hidden taxes that drive up the price of every single thing you buy, we are asked by the government to essentially assume that in exchange we're getting something useful in return, or at least something comparable in return. Maybe if we're paying $15,000 in a particular type of tax, maybe we're getting $15,000 worth of roads or some kind of service that we actually use or want. But the reality is, that's not even true. We're being charged this astronomical amount of money, and a lot of that money is going towards things where you wouldn't want it even if it was free. You wouldn't want that stuff if they paid you to take it. With me right now is Daniel Hayes. He is the LNC Region 7 alternate. He is also the membership officer of the Libertarian Party of Jefferson Parish and the Jefferson Parish representative for the Libertarian Party of Louisiana. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hey, Arvin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. So let's start with domestic. What are some of these areas where, let's start with the lowest hanging fruit. If you were going to say, what are the things that we're paying for domestically that someone would have to pay you a lot to want to accept? In other words, what are the things that we're paying for that are actually negatives?
Well, I mean, where to start? It's really hard to put a finger on where to start. But that said, you could basically put a blindfold on and throw a dart, and you'd hit something that, frankly, we probably don't need. There's too much of, or we could cut. You know, one of the big ones that jumps out at me for spending that's certainly unproductive is the drug war. In the drug war, we spend over $100 billion a year on interdiction. That's direct cost. We're incarcerating people. We're taking people out of the economy, out of being productive. We're spending numerous dollars and time and energy, and it's created this situation where everybody now is a criminal to the police. And so we're in this adversarial position, and it creates just the cost goes beyond the dollars. But sticking to the dollars, it's over $100 billion a year to do what? To stop a guy or a person from engaging in a voluntary act that, you know, especially if they're sitting in their own home, they're not harming anyone else, usually often not even themselves, but even if they were, they're not harming anyone else, and they're not a danger to anybody except for, you know, maybe the tub of Bluebell ice cream in the freezer.
Now, what happens if we were to just using this example, what would happen, what benefits would we see if we just got rid of that whole thing, just shut down the drug war today?
You know, so obviously if you let all those people that were in jail and nonviolent or crime, things that are not actually crimes, things that don't affect another person, we let them all out, honestly, I think we probably see a fair number of those people go in, but if they were no longer ostracized as being a criminal, a felon, there would be those that would be able to reenter the economy legitimately, mm-hmm. productively. And so I think we'd have a tremendous reduction in our costs. You know, obviously it's speculative, but you know, all we have to do is look at what happened with prohibition of alcohol and the sorts of things that went on then. And those that called for a prohibition of alcohol were calling for its end after about 10 years because it increased violence. And also all these things, you know, violence, that's something that's a significant strain on our economy. You wouldn't have these people resorting to taking matters into their own hands. They can maybe, you know, handle matters in a court or something like that if there was some dispute, as opposed to handling it with their fists or a gun, which results often in someone that is uninsured going to a hospital and being paid to be cared for by the public. So there's a lot of indirect costs that we don't even see besides that direct cost of $100 billion. I mean, just doing that would save us. It would help the healthcare system. You know, the inability of localities to pay for their police. If so many things were no longer a crime, you have a lot lower need for police. So that's going to be something that just would tremendously reduce our costs. Also, that's one of the things that drives a lot of the migration into the United States, because if somebody's shooting up my village, I might want to pack up and leave. And, you know, so there's so many effects there that and frankly, so when a lot of those immigrants come here, well, we've got all these other programs that, you know, the welfare system, they can sign up and get free stuff. Sometimes they can sign up and there multiple names and get free stuff and engage mm-hmm. in a lot of fraud. And what's the downside for them? If they get caught, they get sent back home. You know, so there's so many ways that if we got rid of the drug war that we would benefit as a society, and, you know, just financially, but on so many other levels.
Now, what are some of the other domestic type areas where we could just cut something where we would both be saving money, but also getting rid of that agency or department or program would actually be a benefit?
Arvin, I hope you don't feel a tingle down your leg. I'm going to get on one of your topics.
All right, good.
Department of Education. $103 billion for what? To be redundant? To come up with the latest, greatest thing? You know, what it was, you know, No Child Left Behind, you know, in Common Core. What's next? No Child Left on the Side. No Child Left in the Front. No Child Left in the Shed. It's always the mm-hmm. latest, greatest thing. And, you know, what does that do? That drives, oh, we have to get new books. Well, I'm doing air quotes around books because now it's software-based, and so you have to get these new computer systems, new programs. And, well, who usually benefits from all this stuff? Certain partners of these public-private partnerships and certain favored political supporters of many of these politicians that create these programs. You know,
let's talk about that turn of phrase. I mean, we often talk about how in the modern era we're getting this sort of double speak, like 1984, like we have a Department of Defense that does everything but defense. You know, kind of the parallel to the Ministry of I think Peace or something like that in 1984. But with a public-private partnership, it's like they're not even bothering to use any double speak. I mean, a public-private partnership, that just is crony capitalism. That's what the word means. They're not even pretending anymore.
And that's where, you know, there's a lot of people that claim to be small L libertarians. They like that whole model. They say it's reducing government, it's bringing competition to the free market. But frankly, it's exactly.
Yeah, I mean, to me, if anything, a public-private partnership is even worse than just a public-public partnership. I mean, at least with that, we don't have like such obvious concentrated benefits that come from these quote public-private partnerships. What are some of these other areas that we're looking at? So, for example, let's say that we have a situation in which there's a need. In my view, if there's a need for this kind of a public-private partnership, 99% of the time, it's just something where you need to get the public entirely out of the way or get the government out of the way and just let the private enterprise do what it does best.
And that's the thing, Arvin. When you do that public-private partnership, it ends up advantaging certain specific businesses instead of allowing there to be full-blown competition to provide that service. And so that ends up with a less desirable result than what you would end up with otherwise. And often you end up with greater costs because you don't have that competition keeping the cost down because the government, Uncle Sugar, is providing that money there. So you don't have that competition to make the product better, yet be efficient and keep the price down. So what happens? The price just goes up. And, you know, and with the education, you know, you have the K-12 system that, frankly, if that was allowed to occur at the state and local level, they would be perfectly capable of providing that. And if they didn't do a good job of that, talking strictly on the public level, then people could at least move to other states or take their kids like they're already doing and put them into private schools. But that's a redundancy, which granted, there's a lot of people that would say you don't even need the government involved in the education at all. But the federal Department of Education is an absolute redundancy and unnecessary $103 billion a year that we spend. And I mean, that's something right there. Bam, $103 billion. That's huge. We don't need it. You know, we have the State Department of Education. We have local school boards. Why do you need that big one up there that's doing this and dictating all these rules and regulations, which often make the process cost more, all these testing procedures that are very costly that take teaching time away from the children, where instead the teachers are teaching to the test instead of teaching the child what they really need to know about the subject.
And what's extremely important that I think that you mentioned there is that while state-to-state competition is nowhere near as good as, you know, company-to-company competition, it's certainly better than what the current move is, taking something that's already bad, state-controlled education, and taking away the one recourse people do have. In the past, if you didn't like the trashy public schools in Maryland, you could go to the trashy public schools in Virginia. But now, this attempt to standardize them is trying to make them as bad, everyone as bad as the next.
Yeah, right, exactly. It makes it to where they're all the same, and so you don't even get what would have been true competition within that public system, with different public, separate public systems doing, you know, whatever things that they were going to do, and then people could vote with their feet, as the founding fathers suggested, with their 13 experiments of government. So, you know, it's better if you, I'm a firm believer that you keep the public and the private separate, and that is going to be the better thing overall, as opposed to trying to privatize it with this idea that you're actually moving to privatization, when actually you're moving to corporatization and favoring specific selected businesses. And that's
absolutely
always worse for the consumer and the public in general.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about that right after this. Guys, right now we're talking with Daniel Hayes. He is the LNC Region 7 alternate. That's the alternate of the Libertarian National Committee. And what we're seeing is right now ways that we can cut domestic spending. Right after this, let's talk about ways that we can cut some of the foreign spending. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. and we'll take your questions and comments during our live show, Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
No matter what your current situation is, you have a unique story to your life. It's a dynamically changing story that requires constant adjustments to lifestyle and environment. That includes your home. As you continue to enhance your living space, you are also making overall improvements to increase the value of your home. Join Laura Minniff each Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time for dynamic insights for your home environment on the Voice America Variety Channel. And start living now.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. With me right now is Daniel Hayes. He's the Region 7 alternate to the Libertarian National Committee. Daniel, let's actually introduce some of these foreign areas that we can actually cut government spending and either see no loss or see actually a gain by spending less. How can we get more or the same by spending less?
Let's look at the Department of Defense, i.e., you know, our military. Okay, We have thousands of bases overseas in 157 different foreign countries. Mm-hmm. And what if we, okay, now I know a lot of libertarians, they advocate for a 60% slash in the military, just getting rid of much of that overnight. Most people are not going to accept that because they look at the status quo and they think, how can we possibly do that? So let's step away from doing that and let's look at what if we took, without cutting one single serviceman or piece of equipment, and took all of those people and equipment and put them back here in the United States, unshuttered some of the shuttered U.S. bases, maybe opened new ones, kept those people here without, like I said, without cutting one service person or piece of equipment, we would save billions and billions of dollars. On top of that, those people would no longer be separated from their families. They would be home. Fathers would be raising their children. They would be here in this country providing defense if needed, and the money spent on those bases that's instead been injected into foreign countries and foreign economies would instead be spent here in the United States, would help to boost our economy and keep the money here locally. So besides the simple savings of the logistics of not having to send all that stuff over there, we have that money reinvested here, and it would boost our economy. So that's one way to do it. Instead of us patrolling the poppy fields of Afghanistan, we could have them here protecting our country. And, you know, then at that point, a lot of people are much more amenable to talking about it in that particular respect. And some people think, well, we have to be able to project force across the world. Well, why? But even if we do, we have the U.S. Navy. It is capable. One U.S. carrier group, frankly, if it was in a conflict with all but the five or six top militaries in the world, it would most likely prevail with just one U.S. carrier group. We have much more force than we need. So there's no need for us to have all these bases around the world subsidizing all these other countries' economies with our dollars. Mm-hmm. And then that, of course, moves into what we're also doing. We give some of our preferred partners or whatever, we give them direct cash. We spend, I think it's $50 billion a year in foreign aid. Why? They laugh at us as we give it to them. We give $3 billion a year, last I heard, to Israel. And then we give $12 billion a year to the countries around them. That's just direct cash. It's not other sorts of aid that we provide them. So, you know, I mean, it's like our right hand's fighting with our left hand, or you know, trying to take the money out of each other's hands. It's, you know, we need to quit doing that. Why? Frankly, when we do that, we create more costs for ourselves. We're now supposedly going into Syria. Why do we have to go into Syria? Oh, because we armed the rebels to try and overturn Assad, which was the last fairly secular regime in the Middle East. And so now we have to go and stop the threat that we created, just like we did with Osama bin Laden and the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. I mean, it's insanity. And frankly, what it does is it drives the military-industrial complex's profits, but it also raises the cost to the U.S. citizen. I mean, what are we now, $19 trillion in debt with a bullet? Or is it more than that? I frankly quit looking because it hurts me. But it all I know is it's constantly going up. I think they stop the clock sometimes, so it, you know, we're still spending more money. Wow, we're just not letting a little clock run. They just raised the ceiling. What was the purpose of even having a ceiling if you wave a magic wand, it went? And the Republicans and Democrats, you know, I hear so. I'm in what's considered to be one of the reddest states in the country, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And people all the time, they're talking about that they're Obama. Obama's terrible. And yet they neglect that who currently controls Congress, which is the purse strings. That is the Republicans. The Republicans control the House and the Senate. What are they doing to cut any of these programs that the Democrats put in? Oh, well, actually, they put a lot of the programs in place. So they're not doing anything. And when the Democrats are in control, they certainly don't do anything to cut programs that the Republicans made. Nobody's cutting anything. All they're doing is increasing spending, and they waste time, frankly, by saying, we're putting a debt ceiling on this, and then they just suspend the rules, and the debt ceiling's lifted, and you know, the spending rolls on. So, you know, but those are just ways right there, just, frankly, just giving money away. You know, that we're borrowing. We're borrowing.
That's true. I mean, you know, I'm a reasonably firm believer that charity is important, but I think that if you're in debt, being charitable is just kind of silly, especially if you're borrowing money from one country to give it to another country. I mean, that's just straight stupid. But if you're doing it the way that you're describing, where you're literally borrowing money from one country or from your own people to give it to two opposing countries, I mean, that's just straight dumb. I mean, there's no excuse for that, except for if you're thinking, except for the fact that it benefits crony capitalism, or as we like to call them nowadays, it benefits the public-private partnerships. There's an interesting thing that's mentioned over here, which is this idea of debt. And I think it's important that people understand why debt matters. You know, people think, like, you know, maybe it's like this vaguely moral thing or some puritanical idea that you shouldn't be in debt all the time. It's the amount of money that we have to pay yearly in taxes just to pay the interest on that debt is huge. If we didn't have debt, we would pay a lot lower taxes. That's money that we could right now be spending on better education, on entertainment. You could spend it on charity. You could spend it invested in businesses. You could buy, you could do whatever you want with that. Right now, we're using that. A huge part of our tax money is being used for nothing but paying interest, not principal, but interest.
And to think that we borrow money, which we are now paying interest on, to give to other countries. You know, it's, I mean, the cost is not just simply giving it there, because since we borrow it, we have to pay whatever interest it is that, you know, the 8%, you know, T-bill or whatever kind of note that they're, or mechanism that they're doing it with. And, you know, you talked about the cost to the average citizen. Well, you know, jumping back domestically, we spend about $1 trillion a year on the Department of Health and Human Services. Mm-hmm. And that equates to about, basically Health and Human Services is doing things like, you know, Medicare and services to people, you know, in general. So to make their lives better. Well, that comes out to about $8,200 per household. If you let each household keep $8,200 a year instead of taking it from them, you can do a lot with $8,200 a year, Arvin. $8,200 a year, that's going to take care of most people's little hiccups and emergencies. And, you know, so that's just one department. That's Health and Human Services. $1 trillion. Then there's Social Security on top of that. And, you know, HUD, Housing and Urban Development, that's $42 billion a year. You know, Homeland Security, oh, that's one of my favorites here. Being from the New Orleans area, we are intimately involved with the understanding of just how bad FEMA sucks. And, you know, knowing how money was spent, I mean, post-Katrina, they were here doing relief, and they were giving away boxes of MREs. And I know people that got cases and cases and cases of them. They'd go day after day. They were stockpiling. Now, look, if there was ever a very tragic event and things went south, well, especially back then, the people in New Orleans were set for the next disaster for a while. basically, the federal government subsidized a lot of people's rainy day stashes, if you would. You know, and it was just so much waste. And FEMA just, looking at what happened after that, you know, the inability for them to mobilize and get things in place. Church groups were some of the first to make it into the city. You know, people just independently working with their church groups, coming in with chainsaws, cutting trees up and cutting them out and taking them out of the road. They were on it right on the spot. FEMA couldn't get started. And yet we're paying lots of money for this. And Homeland Security, one thing that I noticed, you know, my profession, I'm a massage therapist, and a story in the newspaper a couple of years back caught my attention because Homeland Security was involved with a prostitution sting at a massage parlor, which is not, you know, I'm a massage therapist, so massage parlor is a little bit of a different thing. But I noticed that Homeland Security was involved in that sting. Why is some woman, who I frankly think should have the right to do what she wants with her own body, now if it's human trafficking involved in that, that's another matter. But if it's somebody voluntarily doing this, why are they spending our tax dollars under the Department of Homeland Security to bust prostitution? You know, there's a problem there. So, I mean, it's like all these redundancies. Why is that not being handled by the local police departments if they see it as a problem, which, frankly, I don't see it as a problem as long as it's a voluntary act. So, you know, what's here, though? Uncle Sugar, the federal government, has all these tax dollars that we're going to do this, we're going to do that. They're involved in, you know, that's another form of social engineering, saying, well, we need to get these prostitutes out of here because they're a problem. Frankly, I think they're providing needed service, and, you know, it's the oldest profession, and if they let it alone, they let it alone. But why is the Department of Homeland Security involved in that?
Let's actually talk about that right after this break, because this misuse of funds that are supposed to be dealing with things like terrorism is, I mean, that's a major problem all by itself. Let's talk about that right after this break. Right now we're talking with Daniel Hayes. He's the Region 7 alternate to the Libertarian National Committee. We're going to talk right in a couple minutes just about ways in which these panics about terrorism are being used to fund things that are anything but. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you are listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day, we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control, and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. If you were around during 9/11, you saw the fear, the panic, the devastation surrounding those events. And one of the first knee-jerk reactions was to say, well, we already have a Department of Defense, but let's get an additional department with a name. And in true government fashion, they managed to find a department with a name that was literally a synonym, Department of Homeland Security. And what we were told was this: we need the Department of Homeland Security, we need the Patriot Act to fight terrorism. They were like, we need to fight terrorism because we don't want our buildings being blown up. And honestly, that made a certain amount of sense. We did need to fight terrorism. We don't want our buildings being blown up. But since then, the Department of Homeland Security and its best friend, the Patriot Act, have turned into an unmitigated disaster of government meddling and infringement. They have used tools that were designed to enforce and to go after the most serious threats to our lives and to our way of life, and instead have been using it for non-threats, the least serious threats. Instead of using that for actual terrorism, they've been going after things like prostitution and drugs, which, you know, that's not even the same general category as terrorism. I mean, to say that someone who is smoking marijuana or somebody that's working as a prostitute is somehow on par with Osama bin Laden or in the same category is just straight, that's nonsense. No one could possibly take that seriously. Daniel, what are some of the ways in which we can, what do we need to do to stop that from happening? Do we need to just starve the beast and just cut the funding? Do we need
to
change
our minds? Give me a red pen, Arvin. That's something I thought about during the break. You know, we're talking about a lot of things. We talked about a few ways that we could actually cut it off. Some of it, we're just talking about how wasteful some of this stuff and nonsensical some of this stuff is. And frankly, those things, you simply could just take a red pen and just cut it right away. We wouldn't bat an eye or lose an ounce of sleep, or, you know, we wouldn't even realize it other than the fact that the debt clock would go up a little slower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of that stuff just doesn't even need to be there. You know, frankly, I mean, we talk about, you know, the FEMA, but Homeland Security is involved in prostitution things, you know, since they're also over TSA. Maybe that's, maybe it's to make people a little more amenable to being molested by the TSA when they go through the airports. How many TSA agents have actually caught, I'm doing air quotes around my head, a terrorist? How many terrorist plots have been foiled by the TSA?
No, the sense that I get is something like around somewhere close to zero.
I think that's probably pretty much, yeah, it's about accurate, but close to zero. So, you know, what's going on there? And of course, that kind of jumps into, you know, the Department of Transportation, which is a huge cost, $80 billion, but Department of Transportation is involved with, you know, the airports. Well, we're the United States. We're supposed to be the home of capitalism and the free market, yet foreign countries, foreign cities have privatized their airports. Why can't we do that here in the United States? It'd probably be run much more efficiently, and much more expeditiously, and things would move a lot smoother. They would be in charge of their own security instead of the TSA. You know, that's an $80 billion a year cost. Now, a lot of that are, you know, the roads, and people think, well, you know, if you don't do it, who will build the roads? Well, if they want to know that, they can come to the 2016 National Libertarian Convention, where my good friend Walter Block, a world-renowned libertarian theorist and Austrian economist, will be there. And Walter is very well known for talking about who will build the roads. So, you know, we can privatize all that stuff.
I mean, I'm going to obviously be there, but I'm definitely looking forward to hearing, you know, somebody just set the record straight. Where are the roads going to come from? I mean, I have a few ideas, but I'm sure that Walter's going to have a lot of other interesting ones. So let's get that red pen out. Let's get that red pen out and say, where do we start? You know, somebody hands you a red pen. What are we going to do with it?
Well, first thing, red pen, Department of Education, $103 billion. Okay, bam. You know, as we talked about earlier, Health and Human Services is $1 trillion. Most of that could probably at least half of that could go away immediately, and we wouldn't bat an eye. You know, housing and urban development is scandal-ridden. It's supposed to provide low-income housing. We spend $42 billion a year on that. But by having these, you know, Section 8 programs and things like that, what happens when the government stands for it? Well, a rent that may be slightly higher than market can be charged for maybe slightly less than, you know, adequate services. Now, I know that there are some, you know, restrictions and there's standards that have to be done there, but it perverts the free market as far as the rent goes and what can be earned for properties. So that drives the market overall as opposed to letting it occur organically. You know, you've got the Department of Interior. We spend $13 billion to have one of our federal departments create water crises. They're trying to manage the water, like out in California, in the San Joaquin Valley, trying to save some smelt that's in danger. And it's destroying what's one of the most productive farmlands in the world. And so then that leads you to agriculture. Agriculture, they spend $148 billion a year on the Department of Agriculture. What? Well, you've got these subsidies. We pay people not to grow corn or pay people, you know, to do this for that purpose. There's 266 subsidies associated with the Department of Agriculture. You know, and so that's something that if we let things alone, if we didn't have the Department of Interior messing up the food market by restricting water in places where food could be grown, then, you know, it crosses the lines. You know, we create problems, we pay money to create problems that we then pay money to fix. And if we stop that, you know, so that's $148 billion there, of which most of that we would barely, well, I was going to say we wouldn't even notice, but frankly, we would notice because the market would start working and we wouldn't have some of these people subsidized relative to these prices, and things would stabilize where they should be. You know, you got the Department of Energy, which comes from, let's talk about the Department of Agriculture, with subsidies, corn, you know, and all these energy subsidies for alternative fuels. We're supposedly running out of fossil fuels, right? Why am I paying $1.70, $1.80 per gallon of gas? Because there's an oversupply. Oversupply? Wait, I thought we were past peak fuel. I thought we were short. We're having to close in Louisiana. Our economy, especially in South Louisiana, around the Houma and Thibodaux area, it's intimately intertwined with the oil industry. And people there are being put out of work on a regular basis because the price is too low. The price is too low is because there is an oversupply. So if we quit and we subsidize the oil industry, which is making a lot of money, and even with, you know, the downturn and the low prices, they're still making lots of money. That goes into also this, the Department of Defense. We're spending money overseas to protect our interests, you know, i.e. oil overseas. Well, if we left there and just took care of our own energy needs domestically with what we have available to us with fossil fuels. At the present time, with the shale oils and all that kind of stuff like that, which granted, you know, with fracking, there's some people that are very, very opposed to that. But there is so much energy here in this country right now. We have thousands of years of energy for the whole world right here in the United States. So we don't need all these subsidies. We don't end up with all these scandals and failures like Solyndra, which was supposed to be a green energy company, and we, one of Obama's campaign contributors, that we dropped a whole bunch of money into that, and that went belly up. But I'm sure those executives that work for that company took away their nice little profits. You know, that we're talking about energy, Department of Energy, you've got $30 billion that goes into the Department of Energy. Why do you need a Department of Energy? The economy, the free market, is going to ensure that we have energy. Frankly, it's the government's involvement in that market that is responsible often for shortages. Now, we're not as bad as what occurred, you know, like in the Soviet Union and other places like that, but, you know, there's, in Germany, there were places over there where they put all these regulations in. They were supposedly moving away from nuclear to more green type energy. And now they have shortages over there. Now, we don't have that kind of stuff happening here, but that's what happens when the government meddles with the market. You know, we do have some brownouts occasionally, especially in places like California that tend to have a lot of other regulations. But if we let the market do what it's going to do, we save a whole lot of money on the government wasting a lot of people's time and efforts, and we're going to end up with better products. You know, that's $30 billion right there. I mean, you got the Department of Commerce that subsidizes all kinds of economic activities that, frankly, are better done at the local and state level. That's to the tune of $10 billion. You know, just going down the list, you know, we've got the Department of Labor provides unemployment insurance. You know, if you can't get a job in California or wherever you are, that's very unfortunate, but they kept extending it and extending it. You know, it maybe comes to a point in time where you need to move somewhere else where you can get a job.
Mm-hmm.
That's $53 billion a year for the Department of Labor. They have all these employment training programs. If an employer needs an employee, they should be perfectly capable of providing the training for that employee. Why is the government involved in the training of workers?
I want to talk specifically about labor right after this. Right now, let's hold off on that one, because that's a big one that really needs to be talked about. Guys, right now we're talking with Daniel Hayes. He is the Region 7 alternate to the Libertarian National Committee. Now you're looking at what are some of the areas that we can cut. And here's the thing that's about to happen. We're rolling into 2016. 2015 is kind of a small year for politics. 2016 is a huge year. Presidential races, state races, all kinds of races are going to be happening. And if you want to make some of these departments go away, if you want to return freedom to business, if you want to return freedom to energy, if you want to return freedom to agriculture, you got to get to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
The schizophrenia community faces tough challenges every day. The community includes individuals living with schizophrenia, their partners, parents, children, siblings, friends, neighbors, co-workers, and also their providers of health care and social services. To hear Dr. Gordon Atherley introduce members of the schizophrenia community who are sharing their experiences, tune in to Schizophrenia Community Radio every week, Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
Stock prices plunging, home prices receding, and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. One of the strangest things that the federal and state governments in America do is provide unemployment insurance, which in recent years has just turned into an incentive to not work. Another thing that they do is provide, quote, retraining, which just is essentially nothing but a subsidy to private companies. Now, I'm a small business owner myself, and we spend quite a bit of time and money on training. We spend money on training our employees. In fact, part of the way that we train in my company is even the heads, you know, people like myself, receive training from other people in the company who have certain areas of expertise that I might not have. Now, here's the thing. If let's say that the government said, listen, we're going to step in and provide the training on your behalf, the first thing is I might be disinclined to provide any of it, you know, in my own business. But the second thing is, because the government bungles everything, but it bungles education the worst, the results probably wouldn't be as good either. So I would end up in a situation, which is the current situation, where I'd have to pay the government to retrain workers in a way that's not even usable for either my business or most of the time any other business. Worker training is supposed to actually be part of education. And Lord knows that the average public school graduate is not really trained to do anything, let alone be part of a business, be part of any kind of serious employment. Those that do have that kind of training usually receive it on the job, by working, by actually getting training in a way that makes some kind of sense, not by going through something as just completely backwards and ineffective as Common Core or the other various things that go through the Department of Education. Daniel, when we look at the Department of Labor specifically, what can we just do about that travesty?
Well, you know, the employment training, it's redundant. Most companies, frankly, does the government do anything well? No, they don't. So a company, you may train someone to do a certain job, but unless the government is subsidizing a private company coming in and doing the training themselves, it's probably done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they'd have to retrain them. So that goes back to, why are we subsidizing, as you mentioned, why are we subsidizing the company? If this company has a need for workers and they need them trained a certain way, they need to provide the training and figure that cost into the cost of whatever product or service that they're providing, and let the market determine that, and then that's passed on to the consumer. Instead, we have costs passed on to the consumer through the form of taxes. It all ultimately comes back to the consumer. So, and when that money instead runs through the government instead of directly through the costs of that private company that they pass on to that consumer, the government's inefficient, so it's going to cost 3, 4, whatever times more than if the company simply passed that on to the consumer and did the training themselves. It's certainly mm-hmm. much more efficient to have a company that has, I mean, one, they're going to be able to tailor it much more specifically to what their needs are than some generalized program that the government's going to do. You know, the other thing with unemployment insurance, frankly, you just cut it. I'm sorry. You don't work, you don't eat. It's unfortunate. And here's a funny thing. with regards to labor, before the government got involved in unemployment insurance, labor unions actually provided that as a benefit to their workers.
Mm-hmm.
So it was unemployment insurance. Insurance provided by those labor unions to those workers. There was an actual reason for people to want to join a labor union besides its collective bargaining power.
Mm-hmm.
Those unions provided them with compensation if they lost their job. They don't have to do that anymore. Now, I know here, I just recently met with some members of the Carpenters Union. As a libertarian, you know, in their, you know, union, there's quite a few areas where we, you know, we didn't see eye to eye. We did find certain areas where we did. But at that labor union here, the regional Carpenters Union, they provide training for carpenters to go in there. And it's not just simply, you know, stick construction. They teach them how to deal with concrete forms and all manner of construction. That's being done by people that know how to do it. They're paying for that out of their, you know, in essence, their coffers. That's a value that they can provide to their members. You know, they've since, you know, they've changed the way that they operate, and that particular union doesn't operate exactly the same way that a lot of other unions do, and they do provide some value to its members. You know, but because the government got involved long ago, it removed much of the value that labor unions were providing to their members. So they didn't, you know, so what happens from there? Then you have to have this mandatory force by these unions trying to get people all on board. Whereas if they had something to offer, like unemployment insurance, you'd probably see a lot more people voluntarily joining that labor mm-hmm. union to have that protection and backup instead of having Uncle Sugar, the government, there to do it poorly and inefficiently and subject to fraud. I guarantee you there's nobody going to commit fraud to any significant degree with an organization like that where the members, the board members, are all involved in it. They're going to blow the whistle on everybody or bust them themselves. Whereas the government, fraud is rampant.
And what's particularly interesting is this bizarre idea that people can't, I mean, if you're a homeowner, you buy homeowner's insurance. If you're a renter, you can buy renter's insurance. If you have a car, you can buy car insurance. You can buy insurance for anything. So if somebody wants to buy an employment insurance that has these bizarre benefits like 2 years of unemployment insurance, all right, by all means, buy it. But suggesting that everyone should have to buy it is ridiculous because, quite frankly, a lot of us wouldn't use it in that way. It's true that
we're
many
go
of us
find would, another job.
Yeah. I mean, even if I had that, it's not like I would say, like, all right, now I want to just stop working, because I don't think it's right for my neighbor and my friends and family to have to pay for my laziness. Now, if I was disabled or something like that, totally different issue. But again, you can buy disability insurance. Most professional athletes buy disability insurance. It already exists in the free market. You don't need to have the government do it poorly. You can have the free market actually just do it.
And you probably could get it for less than what they're taking out of your check for or your payment to them to get same level of service.
No question. Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today and just to even take a little extended time to show us where we can downsize government, how that's going to improve our daily lives, how it's going to improve our safety and security, how it's going to help the economy. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the
show.
We
barely scratched the surface there, Arvin. But it's just indicative of just how bloated our government is. You know, we talked for an hour, and there's still so much more.
Absolutely. Guys, we just finished talking with Daniel Hayes. He's the Libertarian National Committee alternate from Region 7. Now, you've seen what we want to have happen. You know it's going to be good for the country. You know it's going to be good for you. You know it's going to be good for the rich, and you know it's going to be good for the poor. You know it's going to be good for those who want to work, and you know it's going to be good for those who want to be encouraged to work. But it's not going to happen by itself, because we have powerful things on the other side. We have two political parties that are basically puppets for the largest companies. We have, quote, public-private partnerships, i.e. crony capitalism, that are finding ways to just use all kinds of government power to abuse property rights, to take our money, and to basically handle it to those that have the most political connections. there's only one organization that's going to actually work to take away government's ability to meddle in your life and take away government's ability to give special favors to private companies. And that organization is the Libertarian Party. If you want to get involved, you need to get right now to lp.org/states and see how you can get involved in a libertarian campaign in your state. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Arvin Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvin Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.